I'm an addict, Bobby P.
Hey, Bobby.
Hi, family. It's a real privilege to be asked to be up here today. And I'm not going to lie, I'm definitely nervous. But you know, I'm in the right place. I'm in the right place. Yeah. I brought this little toy up here. It's two little ladybugs. Yeah, when you squeeze the bottom, it kind of falls, and you let go, it pops back up. This has a lot of meaning to me. And the reason for it is, in my recovery, I got to the point of, in the relationship with my wife, that we were very close to breaking up. And what this program gave me were new tools to use, where I worked on myself. And then one day she gave this to me. And she said, you know, we keep falling down. But you know, you keep putting the work in and the time in, and we keep popping back up. I'll get to the story about that in a little bit. You know, when I think about relationships, what I think is the only way I can have relationships with others is to have a relationship with my higher power and with myself. Because if I don't have a relationship with myself, you know, when I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous 16 years ago, I had no self-esteem. I had no self-worth. I was unemployable. And I had no idea how to have a relationship with anybody, let alone myself. And this program, through the willingness of putting the steps in my life, has given me the ability to have true relationships in my life today. You know, I wrote a little outline that I started about a week ago, and I sit in front of it 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and yesterday at work at about 4:45, I pulled it back out and I was looking at it, and I realized that I didn't have my mother or my sisters on it. You know, and I was talking to my wife about that over dinner last night. And what I realized in that relationship, in those relationships, why I didn't even think about speaking about them today, and you would think I would want to, is that I have such realistic expectations of who they are today that I'm very comfortable with our relationships, you know. I have a sister, she expresses her love by what she buys you, and I don't expect any more from her. And I accept her for that, and I accept her gifts as her love. Of another sister that needs an emotional attachment. And I don't have any more expectations than that. And I know what my mother can give me now in her mid-80s. And I'm happy for all of those things, but you know, I've gotten to a point that I'm very comfortable with those. You know, I'm going to be 50 soon, and none of that's going to change. You know, I'd be happy if they just remember my anniversary every once in a while. But that doesn't matter. You know, I want to really start by talking about my relationship with my higher power. I had none coming in. And it grew very, very slowly. You know, when I first came into the rooms, when I first tried to stay clean, and the first time I asked someone for help, and I prayed, because they told me I needed to ask for help, it worked. And I got a teeny-weeny little bit of faith. And the second time I did it, I got a teeny-weeny little bit of faith. And each time my faith grew. But I got to tell you, I had blind faith at the beginning. And it took a long time for me to be able to start seeing. I remember the first time I truly let go and got humble with my higher power. I had a couple years clean. I was living in Michigan, up outside of Flint. It was in the middle of the winter, and I was walking my dog in this field, and the snow was up to my knees. And I had gotten clean in Pittsburgh, and I was having problems with sponsorship relationships. I had a big ego. You know, they weren't doing things right there. I was trying to change it. But I also, with a couple years clean, had some of the most clean time in the rooms. So it put me in a very uncomfortable situation. I remember that I wasn't able to have relationships with anybody. I wasn't dating anybody. I wasn't getting early to the meetings. I wasn't staying late after. If it wasn't for an H&I commitment, I don't know if I would have stayed clean. And I remember being on this field feeling so lonely, feeling so alone. I began crying in this field with my dog in Flint, Michigan. And I remember looking up to my higher power. And I said, you know, if this is what you want from me, then I'm willing to accept that. Just let me know. You know, it was the first time I ever truly let go and said, God, I'm willing to take the path you put down in front of me, and I don't know what it is, you know. Just help me get down it. And my life began to change. You know, it was weird, but I started staying later at the meetings. And I let some people in, began sponsoring. I found another sponsor because the relationship that I had at that time wasn't working. And my relationship with my higher power began to change. And I remember talking to my first sponsor about his relationship and about faith. And he said, you know, my sponsor has unshakable faith. And I asked him, you know, what do you mean by that? He says, you know, he's lost people in his life, he's lost jobs, he's been divorced, he's been through all of these things, and each time it's happened, he's always known that no matter what happens, if he doesn't pick up and does the next right thing, everything's going to be okay. That unshakable faith. That's about when I began to start feeling it. But what really happened to me, I have a daughter that's 4.5 years old now, and I remember when she was 3 weeks old, I got laid off. I was working out of my house, and my wife was breastfeeding up in the living room, and I was in my office, and my boss did it over the telephone, And I remember going into the kitchen and getting on my knees and thanking my higher power for doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I went, I was able to tell my wife then. You know, because I had the faith at that point in my life. I had that relationship with my higher power that I knew that it was going to be okay. My wife came down when I wasn't looking, and on the door to my office, she wrote, Opportunity Central. Because I knew that life was full of opportunities, because recovery has taught me that if I don't pick up, and if I maintain that relationship with my higher power, that everything's going to be okay. You know, I met my wife on a bicycle ride. You know, I got to the point in my life, finally, after I had moved to Virginia, where I was no longer looking. I said to my higher power, I said, you know, if this is what you want from me, I'm happy to take the path you want me to take. And I started getting into things that interest me. I was at a point in my recovery where I could really do things that interest me. And I started riding bicycles. I loved riding bicycles. I still ride bicycles all the time. And I'm on a bike ride. We both belong to the cycling club. I'm on a bike ride, and I'm riding on just a club ride. I start talking to this woman, because I'm just kind of a friendly guy. And turns out, you know, she's from Pittsburgh, just like me. We met in Virginia. She grew up 2 doors from aunt and uncle of mine. And we shared a lot of core values. And we dated in a way that I've never dated someone before, you know. Someone talked to me at one point about seeing fireworks in a relationship, you know, and she said to me, you know, if you meet someone and you see fireworks, run. She said, run, because what's happening is all you're doing is it's just the sensation, you know. A relationship is built on substance. It's built on sharing a core value in your life. that you can live together through the hard times, because relationships are really hard. Doesn't matter with my wife, with myself, with my higher power, with my boss, with my daughter, with my friends, my sponsor, my sponsorlings. But we had core values together that really kept us together and made us make the commitment. You know, it was really weird because, you know, I was used to a lot of flash and flashy women and all this crazy stuff. And, you know, we were together like about 8 weeks before we really got intimate with each other. I was almost to the point of leaving the relationship. I was like, okay, you know, we're either going to get down to it or I'm out of here, you know. Because I'm going to tell you something. That kind of intimacy was something I knew nothing about. I didn't know anything about intimacy at that point. I learned it through these relationships here in this program and in my life. But I stuck it out because there was something about the values. There's something about the fact that we shared the same faith and our family. We grew up in similar kind of ways, and we believed a lot of the same things were important that made me stick it out. And then we were finally intimate with each other. It had a different meaning. You know, it wasn't the fireworks. It wasn't that explosion. It was coming together of people that had a chance to have a mutual respect and a true regard for each other. You know, we really, really liked each other. I can't say we loved each other at that point, but we really liked each other. So we dated for about a year. We decided to move in together. We're getting ready to get engaged. And, you know, we moved in together. And I had to go away on a business trip. And I came home. And my wife who's my wife now, was so distant to me, I knew something weird happened. I had no idea. You know, she was unpacking all these boxes, and she decided she'd do me a really big favor, and she was going to unpack a box for me. One box. Okay. She picked one box out of all these boxes in this apartment. I had a lot of boxes. I always carried a lot of stuff along. And in this box was all this stuff that I had written. And what did she find? She found my fourth step. And without thinking, she'd already written all this stuff from school and all this other stuff. She opened it up in the middle, and she read the core of my disease. Stuff that I was still in denial about, and I had written that a long time ago. And she read that, and it almost separated us. Somehow I dope fiend through it. Because I'm telling you, at that point in my relationship, I still didn't understand how to be intimate. I still didn't understand how we could be together. And I just bullshitted my way through. Okay? And I was in total denial of behavior that I had that I couldn't see with 7 years clean. So we started going to this meeting, and things moved along. And I met my sponsor, who I have had for a long time. And I met my sponsor. It's funny, you know, we met in this meeting, and he was into bicycling. We started going on these long bike rides together. We go, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 miles on a bicycle. You know, you only go so fast. You have a lot of time to talk. And the neat thing about that is, you know, there's a certain amount of time when you're talking to someone, you got to get through all the BS to get down to what you really need to talk about. And when you have an opportunity to two or three times a month go for a bike ride with your sponsor, you know, he wasn't my sponsor at the beginning, but he, you know, he is now. He's been for probably about, I don't know, about 8 years. You get through the little stuff that doesn't mean anything, and you finally get down to what really counts, you know, in a relationship. You really get down to what you really need to talk about, because, you know, you're spending a couple of hours out on the road, you know, just kind of chit-chatting and spinning pedals. And he's a great guy, has everything that I want, you know. He has a wife, has children, successful, and not just in the things that he owns, but in the way he lives. He's raised children. And I really wanted to be a dad, you know. And he's a great guy. You know, I'm fortunate enough. I sponsor 7-8 guys. We do a retreat every year to really try to get close. We rent this crazy little cabin in the middle of West Virginia in February. And we We spend the weekend in this very rustic cabin talking about spirituality, talking about sponsorship, getting close. We take a meeting into a treatment center. And, you know, we do things together as a family because we are a family. You know, and through that I met this guy that I sponsored. I want to talk about this one guy because he taught me a lot about relationships. This guy, Martin, you know. I was always intimidated by people, especially doctors and lawyers, and you know, because I was pretty unemployable. And I felt really small against someone that had an education. I dropped out of college 3 times, never got a degree. And this guy asked me to sponsor him, and he was a doctor. You know, and I was really totally intimidated by this man. I was intimidated because he had a lot of money. I was intimidated because he had the degrees, that he was someone that I never felt equal to. And he taught me that I can be equal to anybody, that I can have a friendship with anybody at any level, that they're still just people, they're still just addicts, and that I'm good enough. I'm good enough. You know, our friendship got so close that I can't sponsor him anymore. You know, this relationship got to the point to where he felt it was easier to find a new sponsor than to change the dynamics of where our friendship was going, the kind of relationship that we were developing. And we still talk to each other just about every day. And we have for about 7 years. And, you know, he really gave me the ability to stand up to anybody. You know, God put him in my life at a time when I needed him to be there. And then God put another person into my life, this guy John, and he moved in the area. He had a little bit more time than me, and he had a lot of the same core values in recovery as I did. And we started doing text study together. You know, one of the things I really missed about moving around in recovery is there's something about when you get clean in an area and you walk into a meeting and you see people that were there when you got clean 10 years later, whatever, and you see those people that you got clean with. When you move a few times, you lose that. You lose that. So you come into an area and you look around, you don't see anyone that you got clean with. You don't see anyone that you talked about the first step with, and you talked about the second step with, and you talked about the pain of writing your first fourth step with. You know, and I hooked up with this guy. We started reading the basic text together, a line at a time. We started on the first page, and sometimes we get a page, sometimes we get 5 pages, and we talk about what it was like getting clean, and talked about where the basic text was in our lives and what it's taught us, and we developed an intimacy that is like someone that I got clean with. And we're very, very close friends today because of that. And at that time, because I was willing to do that kind of step work, God did something for me. I believe, you know, recovery is like an onion, you know, and you got all these layers. And I had something where I had trouble learning to read as a kid. And in this problems of trying to learn to read, I never felt good about myself. It was one of the things that really made me feel less than, made me feel like I couldn't excel at a job, made me feel like I couldn't feel equal to. And that kind of came revealed to me at that time I was doing all that text study. And I got willing to go, and I got tested at this place that tested people for learning disabilities and all this stuff. And I found out that I was pretty smart. You know, I thought, you know, because I had trouble learning to read as a kid, and back then, they couldn't tell a learning disability from anything. They all thought because I couldn't learn to read that I was dumb, you know? And I had to go through all that testing. You know, again, this is part of my relationship with myself, because when I took the risk of either finding out that, yes, I am dumb, or no, I'm not, you know, and I found out that I wasn't. And it changed at the core of me how I felt about myself. You know, I used to read really slowly. You know, it'd take me like almost a year to read a book, and all of a sudden I was reading fast. You know, all of a sudden I was enjoying reading in a way that I never could before. And more than anything, I didn't feel stupid anymore. You know, when you go around a lifetime feeling stupid because you can't read, because you couldn't learn to read right, you know, it keeps you from doing anything. So I did that risk, and it made a lot of changes in my life. Then something else happened. In this relationship with my wife, I did some things where I didn't tell her stuff because I was trying to protect her. You know, and she really got upset. You know, I was trying to protect her by not telling her stuff that was going on. That was important stuff. Stuff that she should know. And we almost broke up over it. We came real close. It took me saying I was going to go into therapy and work on myself to deal with why I was doing that kind of behavior for her to even stay close. And what I discovered in therapy was that I couldn't tell someone how I felt. You know, I couldn't tell someone how I felt. So I started working on how do I feel. And then what I discovered was that I've been escaping for a lot of years in a sexual addiction, which I found out in the same therapy. And a big part of what was going on with the relationship with my wife was I wasn't there for her because I was going through stuff and I was escaping through masturbation, through pornography, through all this stuff that I thought was harmless, that actually I thought was normal. Because you know what? When I was 8 years old or however I was, when I was trying to learn to read, what I started doing was I started masturbating and fantasizing, and that was the drug I used as a little boy when I was a little kid. This is what I've learned. And because of that, you know, my wife blamed herself for my inabilities in that relationship because I was jerking off 3 times a day. And I couldn't be with her. But, you know, I let her and a lot of women before that think that it was their fault, not mine. But you know what? It was my fault because I didn't know how to cope. You know, no one ever gave me the skills as a kid to deal with those feelings I had when I was a little boy, when I couldn't learn to read, and I went from these advanced classes to these dummy classes. And that's where I started acting out on my disease. And it was real natural for it to go to drugs. You know, I've had to make a lot of changes in myself, you know, and by changing that behavior, you know, I no longer have an escape. You know, and I'm now communicating at a level with my wife that I've never I've got true intimacy today because I'm not going anywhere anymore. I'm not using drugs. I'm not spending money. And I definitely did a lot of retail recovery. I got more debt in recovery than I ever did using. I'm not going on into my fantasy world anymore. I am there. And that's when my wife gave me this. That's when she gave me this, is when I stopped that behavior, and then all of a sudden, I was there for her. I was there for my daughter. I was there for the people in my life. And all of a sudden, we started really developing a relationship together based on intimacy, based on me being there 100%. You know, I've got this little girl today. She's 4 and a half, little Leah. And I think about the amends that I need to make. And I know today as a father that the greatest amends I can make to anyone in recovery is to give her the tools that were never given to me and to teach her how to deal with her feelings, teach her how to communicate, so she doesn't have to find an escape and have to come into this disease. You know, I can do that, I feel like I've really made an amends, you know, because I've made a lot of the others, you know. And since I discovered my sexual addiction, I've had to add a few more people onto the list, because there's a lot of other women that felt that same way that my wife felt until I got real in my life. You know, last weekend we were up at Sugarloaf Mountain hiking, and we had a little incident happen. And my wife didn't feel that I was supporting her the way I should have, because I felt what she did was wrong with an interaction with another family, with some boys that were throwing some rocks. I thought she went too far, and I told her. She had a lot of feelings about the fact that she didn't feel supported. And, you know, being able to wait a day and really talk about her feelings and validate them, and her, being able to tell her my feelings, and still, I still stood on what I stood on that made her so angry. But through us being able to talk about it, we got through something that I'm telling you, 5 years ago, we would have broken up over. You know, I would not have stayed with a woman under that situation. What I've really learned, and this was really hard, is that I can disagree with someone that I love, whether it be someone I sponsor, a friend, someone, a family member, my wife, my daughter. I can stand up for myself. I can disagree with them 100%. They can still love me. That was hard. And you, the other thing that I've learned is that I can really do something stupid. And, you know, my wife can get really mad at me, and she can still love me. You know, I never understood that. I never understood, you know, I was such a people pleaser in my disease that I was afraid for someone to get angry at me. Because I was afraid if she would get angry with me, she'd leave me, and then what am I going to do then? So I'm just going to do whatever I need to do so she doesn't get angry. And you know, I've learned that if the relationship has any substance, is that someone can be angry at you, and you can still have a relationship. You can still work it out if you're willing to listen, if you're willing to be there, if you're willing to bend, not always be right. You know, it's just like what I heard when I first came in the rooms. Even if I want to get high today, I don't have to pick up the first one. Still the same thing. Still the same message. I don't have to use today. I don't have to let my feelings get in the way of my life. I don't have to take my feelings. You see, today I feel so good about myself. You know, because I've been willing to stand up to my demons. The whole thing with reading, dealing with my sexual addiction, dealing with all of those things that I've been kept very open. You know, there's one other thing that helped me a lot that I'll share with you. When I first started discovering that my sexual addictions, one of the things I did, a guy that I sponsor, we started getting together with some regularity, and we started doing these mini fourth steps together. You know, and what happened was we would sit, we would pray, we'd go off, we'd write for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, on just real focused stuff. I was writing on trying to figure out where all this stuff was. And he was writing on other stuff. Then we get together and we do mini fifths with each other right then and there. You know, when I've been willing to put my life in recovery, you know, when I was willing to do that text study, to do that extra work at 14 years clean, whatever, you know, when I was willing to do these mini fourth steps with time and not thinking I got it all, God gave me the ability to face my monsters. And with that, I'm going to keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Bobby. Okay, our next speaker is Teresa F.
Hello, family. My name is Teresa, and I'm an addict. Love y'all too. It's just beautiful to be able to see my fellow brothers and sisters out there seeking recovery, trying to move on with their journey, trying to discover, trying to learn means and ways to stay clean and live a normal life, whatever normal is. Let's have a moment of silence, because it's always my greatest attribute to let God know how much I love him and how much I need him, even in this recovery process. So if you feel the way I do, let's have a moment of silence. Amen. First of all, in my moment of silence, I ask that God's will be done and not my own. Because let me tell you something. Let's cover speakerphobia for a minute. I don't know if you, or if there are those of you, I'm sure there are, that have gone and done workshops or been main speakers, and the things that you go through before it's time for you, or your D-Day, before it's time for you to get up behind this mic, because you know what? It takes courage. And it's not just a self-will courage, it's a spiritual food. It's a spiritual type of courage that has to come in there and have you just as calm, because there was so many of you coming in this meeting. I was saying, dang, what in the world? Is there any other workshops going on? But then I had to think to myself, when I was a newcomer and I first came around, the relationship workshop was on for me. See, I came here, I was looking for some stuff. I know what a lot of y'all out there are looking for. I was looking for it too. I had to have some answers. You hear what I say? Okay, then, you done told me how to say clean. Now tell me how I get with it. You see what I mean? How do I make this shit work? Okay, I'm all right with the job and the family and so forth and so on, but I need to know about relationships. And when the gentleman was sharing, you know, I always watch people. And I was looking at him, and I saw some eyebrows light up when he went to talking about his sexual addiction. Because believe it or not, like this gentleman said, some of them come here because they want to hear about the sexual addiction. You know that's right. Some of you do. And it's okay. I wanted to know about the shit myself. I wanted to know what other people had to say. I'm not here to bash you. I'm here to let you know I'm just like you. I studied this daggone relationship workshop for over 10 years. And I've been listening to what people had to say. And I've been studying on things. And I've been trying to learn stuff. Some stuff I told them, you can carry that shit back with you. Because I didn't think it was going to work for me. But eventually, it did. I used it on another date. I took a rain check. So I ain't going to sit up here and tell you I throw away things that people tell me in Narcotics Anonymous, because I don't. I might not use them right then, but I know if I keep coming back, that stuff gonna show up and I'm gonna need some help. So I better remember where my help coming from. I just want to go over a few of the things I was sharing, and thank you for sharing. Get this gentleman a hand. Yes, indeed. He didn't have to come in here and tell his business like he did. See, that's another phobia. Another speaker phobia. We come in here sometime, and then we don't know how you're going to accept. The only thing that we have to do or can do is come in here and have faith that God is using us for that vehicle, and whoever is supposed to hear is going to hear. And whoever's not, you can't worry about it. Because, see, my daggone ego might tell me, oh, they got up and walked out. Maybe I should have went first. You see what I'm saying? Those are the kind of things. See, the disease of addiction plays not by rules. It's always funky and skunky And what it does is it attacks you in the least ways that you would expect it to. Earlier, I could sit out there in the hallway. This is the type of person I am. When I know that God has given me the opportunity to share, I better be talking about him, number one, because he has power in my life, and to him I owe all the honor. Because let me tell you something. In 1999, I came to this convention. And I was sitting out there at the Friday night meeting, and a spiritual speaker came up to speak. Everybody kept clapping. Of course, you know, y'all follow y'all own folk. See, because D.C. is out there and Baltimore, and you know, and y'all are real out there. So the guy went to share. And I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden he lost it. So he thinks. And he couldn't share about anything but his higher power. Let me tell you something. That was the most profound message I ever heard of. The most profound thing. I said, in his hour of darkness, he turned to the one who had all light. You see what I'm saying? He turned to his HP. See, y'all won't get it for him. He kept apologizing, talking on something. Well, I listened to what everybody had to say, and everybody had told him something to come up here with and say. He listened to everybody but his higher power. So in the midst of his storm and his humility, his higher power came in and broke him down like a shotgun and reloaded him. And I was out there to catch them bullets. Yes, I was. I was out there catching them bullets. You hear me? I sat there and it was like my mouth was hanging wide open. I know he quoted a few scriptures here and there, you know, and I know this ain't their religious program, but at that particular moment, it wasn't the scripture I was interested in. It was how he turned to his higher power. One of the greatest relationships that you can have in life. That's where I'm going with that. I ain't trying to preach. I'm just trying to give some hope in here. Because you can't get out of life without death, life, so forth and so on. You've got to die to leave here and go on where you got to go. You know what I'm trying to say. And then you can't get out of this program without a higher power. Give you another example. There was this gentleman, and he used to come to meetings. He had a lot of clean time. I guess he had, when I had 5 years, I know he had 10. And he used to come into the meetings, and let me tell you something, I'd be sitting by him. And a lot of times I would get up and move because I didn't agree with everything and his grumbling and moaning. He was atheist. And every time somebody put the second step or the third step on the flow, seventh step, 11th step, then he always had something to say. You see what I'm saying? And I would sit there and I would listen to the little comments because I was too nosy to move because I wanted to hear what he had to say because I was watching that old timer. I was newcomer. I was still new in my opinion. But he would be saying some of the most ungodly little things. This is not a religious program, and so forth and so on. And I'm going to get him at the end of the meeting. Somebody straighten him. Somebody tell him. Don't you know, this past January, that same individual came and spoke at somebody's celebration, and he took up the whole meeting time talking about his higher power. Those are the miracles I'm talking about. I ain't talking about no unexplained phenomena. I'm talking about miracles. I'm talking about things that my higher power lets me see why it's so important for me to have him in a program like this. We don't have the patent on recovery per se. Only thing that we can tell you is we promise freedom from active addiction. We don't have a cure. If we did, all these faces wouldn't be in here. I knew y'all would have better things to do. I know I would. I'd be laying up looking at the stories on the soap channel or something like that. I wouldn't be in here. But the bottom line is, there is a God. I'm going to tell you about the first relationship, though. The most important relationship that I've come in contact with is the one with me, Teresa. That's the one. That's the one. That's the stumper. You hear what I say? That one with you, yourself. You know what you've been doing. You know the things you've done in your lifetime. You know the little secrets. You see what I'm saying? All the little funky, skunky stuff that you done. You see what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about. Don't let me look at you in a strange way. See, because I face people today. I'm free. Free. And whom my H power has set free is free indeed. So what I do is I thought about those things. And then my mind started saying, well, wonder if God was watching me when I was turning them tricks. Wonder if he was watching me when I was stealing and when I was taking money from church. You see what I'm saying? Wonder if he was watching me when I was in the penitentiary, when I was doing some unseemly things. You know what I mean? I ain't got to do particulars. Use your damn imagination. Whatever the hell you come up with, you own. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the little things that you know you want to carry to your grave with you. You see what I'm saying? The things that you don't want nobody else to know. See, because we done got in here and we got clean there. We're upstanding. You see what I'm saying? Upstanding citizens. And some of us forget from where we come. See, because I'm going to tell you how we can do that. Just look at some of the ways we treat each other. What you say? But anyway, when I was a scratch in my daddy's pants before I even got here, you see what I'm saying? The road was already laid. You know, my higher power had already seen that I was coming and already seen, and this is my belief, I ain't trying to push nothing, that I was going to be right here at this 0 hour. And whoever's supposed to get this message is going to hear it. Somebody in here, I wouldn't give a damn if it was just one person. The person that's supposed to hear this message is going to hear it today. And it's going to save their life. Just like if somebody in here that's not going to hear the message and that's going to die. You might relapse. You might fall short spiritually. Whatever lies away for you in this human trap called life will take its course in life. So I was born, of course, and my mother, you know, I was born during a time, see, because I ain't no spring chicken, and let me get the things out the way that I might lie about. I'm 51. 51. Thank you for coming up almost on 50. On a good hair day, I have hair that's hip length. And I might weigh 125 pounds if I want to. I might if I want to. Today, I feel like I am. Catch me tomorrow, I might change my mind. But the bottom line is, it's nothing wrong with self-talk. See, what I found out even from the womb, when I was conceived and when I came forth on this earth, there were certain things that I needed. I needed then for my mother to feed me. I needed then to be clothed. I needed to be protected from the environment. I needed to be nourished. I needed to be loved. Human beings can't live without love. And the ones that us that do and try to are the ones that are most screwed up, because we're the ones that think we can do it on our own. I was like that. So my mother and father, well, my mother, because one parent family, taught me a lot of things. And you know, my mother's a perfectionist. Oh, Lord, you can't do nothing right in her eyesight. So for my mother's benefit, when I was coming up as a child, I competed with all the things that I know that my mother liked. First of all, she liked men. And she liked men with money. I'm not trying to call her a hoe or nothing like that. But what I'm saying is my mother was practical. You know, she thought logically. She thought about surviving. See, we lived in the project, and we lived back in the ghetto, and so forth and so on. And during the time that I was out there as a child, there was racial segregation. See what I'm saying? So those are the things that I had to look forward to. And most of the prejudice happened within my own race. See, because the prejudice didn't happen with the people that were white so much of it was with the people that were light in color. So they tarnished me. They tarnished me. I didn't have good hair. You see what I'm saying? You know how we want to grow up and the men we choose gonna be light-skinned with good hair so that babies can come out looking like the daddies? You know how we do? Some of us still hung up in the past, but it's all right. See, because some of us go on looks. Everybody don't always go on a person's character or his integrity. So we in the right place. But anyway, as I was growing up, my grandmother used to keep me. And my grandmother was the color of this gentleman's jumpsuit, the black one. She was darker than some black shoe polish. But her other children were light in comparison to me. Now you're going to look and say, well, you ain't that dog. Yes, I was in comparison to those that I was raised with. And I used to notice little things about her that she would do. Like we would be in the backyard playing and she would separate me from the kids. You know how, see, the bitch was thinking she was sneaky in the first place. I'm sorry. I'm going to let myself go because, see, I'm not going to be up here trying to contain myself. I'm not worried about what you think about me. See, because the important thing is what I think about myself today. And if I hadn't thought nothing about myself, I wouldn't be up here talking to you in the first place. In fact, the feelings that went with it. So what I did, I went and I laid on the couch. I laid on the couch. And in my lying on that couch, I surrendered. I became free. I don't know what that rascal told me to begin with, but somewhere down the line, as I kept coming back, the NA concept, I came to. NA steps. Then I turned my will and my life over to a higher power. And at that point, it was him. And he worked with me. I had a stealing problem one time in the fellowship. I didn't think it was stealing because I said I stole responsibly. I stole responsibly. I stole with significance and sophistication. I stole for the reason of education. I didn't steal because I was a thief. I told myself that. Early in recovery, I stole books from my therapist. Gave them to my sponsees. Higher education. Learning. I wanted them to be smart. I said, ignorance is not bliss. So what they did in return, they read them. Passed the shit on to their sponsees. Let them get help with their problems. I saved them a doctor bill. I was a Robin Hood of Narcotics Anonymous. See, I can tell you all them things today. I used to couldn't take it. The disease said you better sit on that and don't fret that one, Teresa. But now I had to let you know how sick the disease had gotten me. And then in a fourth step, and then a fifth step, I turned around and told the therapist what I had been doing. And of course, he's bound to me. I ain't no fool. He's bound to me. Legally, he cannot disclose my information. So I say, well, I've been stealing. God tell me he would not have me be stupid. I'm sorry. So we worked on that. And that helped me with that. Because he told me, he said, well, Teresa, you don't have to steal. He said, if you had asked me, I would have gave it to you. That's too simple for the addict I am. I ain't never known nobody to do that shit to me. When you stole something, you better keep quiet about that. I don't even care if it's educated. It's the concept of stealing. It wasn't so much the act in itself. But when you steal, you're supposed to not disclose the information. Am I right about it? Fool me. That was some turning points in my doggone recovery. So finally, after I went through that part, because see, I'm like Frankenstein. I made me the person I wanted to be. See what I'm saying? Frankenstein was a doctor. What did he do? He made a man. You know, he wasn't a monster, but it was something that went wrong with the man he made. Now that happened to me too, because the old me met up with the new me. And then I had character defects all over the place, all the way up in step 6. And I had to humbly ask God to remove those things because I had suppressed them so long. I didn't think that all those things that they taught me and that I believed were wrong. I thought that that was just the way it was. I thought I had to be those things, to be that way. An illusion, fantasy. I thought and I thought and I thought. And that's where I was, left with my thoughts. So finally, I made my amends in my 8th step. Because the reason why I switched over to the steps just at this point Because I don't want you to think that it was all just about me and that my knowledge came in different little ways. I got to let you know the vehicles and the avenues. See, because sometimes I know people shut down when you start talking about steps and traditions. Because you know why? Because we like to procrastinate. We fast talkers and slow thinkers. You ever thought about that? And what seems to happen for us is, well, it ain't no rush. You know the excuses we give to each other. Well, I'm going to be in recovery for the rest of my life. Shit, suppose you die tomorrow. See what I'm saying? It ain't no race. You know all the things we be talking about. I be sitting there cracking my sack. I use every last one of them. So the bottom line was I decided to recover. And then when I made my amends, and one of my biggest amends was to stop sleeping with that man. You see what I'm saying? And stop thinking about it and stop going through the motions in my mind. See, the mind is a terrible place. You got your cortex. You got your medulla oblongata. You see what I'm saying? You got all your stuff. And here I am sitting up here. I'm a type A personality with a couple of B overtones. See, because I don't want to give myself away and say that I'm just this worst person. I want to leave myself a little out there. See, because God won't let you run up in a hole and don't leave you a door to come through there. See, because I could get trapped in that house and lose my mind. See, because this disease will kill you. And it will run you insane. And you can get a doggone, you could break out in jails and institutions and death with a allergic reaction. Yeah, I got an allergy. I broke out in jails, institutions, and death. So the bottom line is, when I did the ninth step and made my amends wherever possible, some of the things I only had to do was change my behavior. See what I'm saying? That's all I had to do. And to change my behavior, I had to destroy some of the beliefs. I had to destroy some of the things that I had built my life on. And in my 10th inventory, when I do my daily inventory, I have to think about my husband. Hey, baby, you over there asleep? Let me tell you something. I have ambition. I'm arrogant. You know, see, because the book says we're only arrested. That means that it's stopped for the moment. It's only an arrest. It can get bonded out at any time. It can get out on its own recognizance. It will work you and make you open the door. You see what happens? So what I did was, in my inventory and my ambition, I like to try to control my husband sometime, and he got control issues too. Ain't it, baby? But the bottom line is this. We have found somewhere, because we've been together 12 years, and let me tell you something. We came together just for sexual reasons. He know I know about it, because in the beginning, that's all we did. So that's the part of the relationship workshop. If you want to know about sex, yeah, me and the old man kept getting it on. And then finally, one day, we woke up and started working some steps. See, because we cheated on each other and anybody else. And we tried to make that stuff work. And for 5 years, when I finally told him, well, you're going to marry me now because father time is ticking and the biological clock is moving, because I know that the old body won't going to be able to produce no more cheering. And I knew that a little weight was going to come on here and a great hair was going to start coming out the wild. So I was desperate. I ain't no fool. I was desperate. I told him, look, I went in the room and exploited him. I told the people, he ain't trying to make an honest woman out of me. Y'all told me about living the NA way. I told on it. He said he wasn't going to leave. He's going to sit right here. So you sit over there, baby, because me and you in here together. But it's all right. You know, and so finally, and saying while I was trying to get him to make this honest woman out of me, and God knows I want an honest woman to begin with, but I seen it in books, and I wanted a daggone wedding. I wanted to walk down the aisle with a dress on. You know, I wanted people to recognize me. I wanted a house with a picket fence. You know, and he did too. He didn't want to walk down the aisle with a dress on, but he wanted to come down there with his tux. And we wanted to make that fantasy reality. Here it is, an old dope fiend, somebody stole, somebody go to jails and institutions and so forth and so on. He had already been married, so I was getting him the second time around. I had been married too in name only because the system broke us up. You know, being locked up will steal your man or your woman. So it broke up my relationship, but when we got together, he didn't like women and I didn't like men. We all both had been hurt by things that had happened to us in life. So as time went on and we continued, because he's been wanting to leave me at a time in his life and I wanted to get rid of his ass too. But we walked through those storms, because I heard the lady say, and I heard my brother over here talk about walking through the storms and keeping that relationship together. What can you talk about after the sex is over? What is it? What can you talk about? What's the message after you put your clothes on? Was it just on? Do we leave? You know, some of us still walk around here talking about we in love. We ain't, we don't love, we in love. However y'all got that shit all twisted up. Can't even love yourself. Talking about you in love. I said, what the hell is that? How you tell the difference between that, these authorities in here? You see what I'm saying? But I sit back and I listen, I chuckle a little bit sometimes. I say, well, whatever, ticks your clock, baby. But I've stayed with my husband. We've been together through lust, rust, and dust. Yes, we have. That is my best friend. Me and homeboy is all right. We have been through everything together. We used to, look, finances be bad. We done paid the bills. Look, the sixth tradition done taught us about the money, property, and prestige. We decided we was going to beat that because dope fiends don't want to disclose what's in their pocket. Just like some of us married or relationships don't want to tell a husband what the wife got and the wife got the husband got. And it's all tied up with the disease of addiction. Because that's for your pill of dope, whatever it may be. But the bottom line, this is also sneaky behavior. So what we did was we got together and put that money together. And what's left over with, that's what we keep. That's how I was able to continue with my marriage. So when we got over those hurdles, is that the first time you put that up there or the last time?
It's about the second.
That's the second time. I'm going to get out of here. But I just wanted y'all to know that, listen, I am a grateful recovering addict. You know, I'm come from Hampton, Virginia. You know, some of my folk out here, my sponsees, yes, they are. I love my area. You hear what I say? And I love my husband. He over there. And the bottom line is, if Narcotics Anonymous and this program can do something for me, take me from the miry clay and clean me inside out, and then make me an example, and it be God's will, he can do the same thing for you. I'm Teresa. Bye.